Mitch McConnell is asking for the pitchforks by Lauren Martinchek. It feels like the Senate Majority Leader is daring us to challenge him. As the coronavirus continues to spread and unemployment levels soar to levels not seen since the Great Depression, the American people continue to feel the burden of the economic devastation. As millions become unable to pay rent, the American government sent a means-tested one-time check of $1,200 to adults and $500 per child as a part of a coronavirus relief bill. An amount not even enough to cover rent in many cities across the country, let alone put food on the table and pay bills. But as the lines at food banks grow, health insurance is lost with jobs that are lost, and another month unable to pay rent goes by, the desperation clearly being felt by the American people does not seem to bother the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in the slightest. According to the senator from Kentucky, there is no sense of urgency to pass an additional bill. So as we get to this point in the story, your minds are probably already going where mine was, which is, well, what about Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer? What are they doing? But we'll get to that. The Hill reports. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Monday that he's in constant communication with the White House about the federal government's response to the coronavirus pandemic, but that there isn't yet a need for Congress to pass additional legislation. We're basically assessing what we've done already. I'm in constant communication with the White House, and if we decide to go forward, we'll go forward together, McConnell told reporters. I don't think we have yet felt the urgency of acting immediately. That time could develop, but I don't think it has yet, McConnell added. McConnell's comments follow him calling for a pause before any additional coronavirus stimulus legislation so that lawmakers can figure out what has and what hasn't worked from the nearly $3 trillion already appropriated by Congress. What he means by that is, has the stock market continued to drop? Has it stabilized? Is it rising? He wants to see what the stock market is doing. He has no interest in seeing how Americans are doing, especially American workers. Everything he's doing right now is to ensure that the donor class will continue to support him. He doesn't give a flying fuck about his approval ratings. We'll get to Nancy and Chuck in a minute, but they also don't give flying fucks about their approval ratings. I don't think we have yet felt the urgency. Comments such as these do little to alleviate my fear that America has become a failed state. The complete and total disregard for the reality so many of us are facing and dismissal of the severity of the situation is not only indicative of how morally bankrupt our government has become, it shows that they are fundamentally unequipped to treat this crisis in the manner necessary to save the middle and working classes. They don't give a fuck about the middle and working classes. They're doing just great by their donors, and that's all they care about. Nobody's ever going to vote Mitch McConnell out as long as his donors are happy. Of course, Senator McConnell is not unaware of what's at stake. Unsurprisingly, he has taken the opportunity to hold the American people hostage. We will be starved into submission if need be in McConnell's effort to get away with every right-wing dream he possibly can. Whether it be payroll tax cuts or destruction of the post office, rest assured the self-identified Grim Reaper will do everything he can to rob the American people on behalf of his donors once again. Shamelessly, he has already declared the Democrats' $3 trillion relief bill dead on arrival. When we get to Nancy and Chuck's part of the story, we need to remember that little tidbit. Dead on arrival. And he's not bluffing. He has no incentive whatever to listen to the Democrats. And the Democrats wouldn't have even proposed this legislation if it had had any chance of passing. They rely on the Republicans to give them cover. Now, Lauren brings up the symbolic answer to this problem. At this point, not only are they asking for pitchforks, they're asking for the guillotine. But unless we replace the symbolic pitchforks and guillotines with real ones, we're not going to get anywhere. The donors will protect them from any kind of voter revolution. And you may think, well, how will they protect them? Oh, I see, they'll just give them a lot of money so that they can buy television ads. But no, that's not the only way they protect them. The main way they protect them is through the media, which they also own. The class warfare that's been covertly waged for decades by the elite against the masses is now out in the open, and they are blatantly daring us to challenge their power. Frankly, it's only a matter of time before the anger and desperation felt all across the nation is put forth in the streets. Whether it be in the next few weeks after another rent payment is missed, when people are unable to get the health care they need because their insurance disappeared with their jobs, or when many of the jobs that have disappeared for the duration of the crisis fail to reappear because of government inaction, we're heading for civil unrest the likes of which we may not have seen in decades, if not centuries. There is no denying that the elite are playing with a fire that only continues to grow larger and more difficult to contain. I'm not sure how much longer Senator McConnell feels he will be able to get away with crushing the American people, but for better or worse, these unsustainable inactions will change the country forever.
Do you feel like due to this election and pandemic economic crisis, there will be a significant populist uprising by the next two election cycles or later? If yes, how do you think it will develop? What's your best guess? Hashtag rising cues. What do you think, Crystal?
I'm very worried that people are so beat down that they do not actually come. I mean, this is not an uprising and changing the political, like, none of these things are inevitable. And the working class in this country has been so quashed for so long with a boot on their throat. I don't know. I just worry that right now there's such a sense of just like despair and apathy. Now that can change. I mean, right now we're in the throes of the crisis, and what we saw under the financial collapse and the rise of Occupy Wall Street and the populist stirrings that led to Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, like, it took a while for that to develop. And that may very well be the case, but I don't think that any of that is inevitable. I think there is a deep sense of like nihilism and apathy and disgust that could just weigh people down.
I totally agree with you. And that's why none of this will happen organically, is that a leader has to come in and seize the political opportunity and take your nihilism, turn it around and say, no, we have an opportunity to actually do something. That was the great kind of political genius of people like FDR, people like JFK, people like LBJ, is they seized upon that and productively channeled it. It can go very much the other way. I mean, look, 1930s, right? Like, we know exactly how they can go all across the world. So it's actually even more important that the leadership class recognize this opportunity. Otherwise, it's going to go exactly as you say here.
Yeah, I think that's right. The next question is kind of related, actually. How does the country recover politically, socially, economically, and financially after this pandemic, which has shown the true colors of those charged with representing the people as nothing but corporate loyalists and hypocrites? Does the country ever truly recover?
Preach, man.
And look, that has been one of the dynamics that we have charted here, is there really haven't been any heroes. I mean, you really can't point to a single figure here who has been uniquely courageous, who has really uniquely been, not only, you've had some people who have had the right ideas, and they've even been able to like challenge leadership in certain specific instances, at least rhetorically. But in terms of actually galvanizing and using power and being willing to be hated and all of those things on behalf of the American people, we just haven't seen it. So look, I think both of us have said here, like, the populace at the very beginning of this crisis lost. In that first massive bill,
like that,
when the corporate interests actually needed something and you had real leverage, what did they do? They tied it all together so that workers and small businesses were held hostage. They got their way. And now, in a sense, the path forward is already charted. Like, that direction of everything getting bigger and small businesses getting destroyed, like, that future is already ahead of us. And so it's not going to be some incremental change that's going to pull things back. It will require a dramatic, like, transformational type of structural shift in order to pull things back even to the way that they were, let alone improve things markedly.
So that's the thing. We need to all be okay with the fact that things aren't going to go back to normal. I mean, who wants to go back to normal? Normal sucked. That's what was one of the main points of this show that we talked about all the time, which is, no, normal is not all fine and dandy for millions of Americans. And we know we shouldn't have to go back to that. After a defining moment like this, every single time the country has changed, it doesn't always change for the better. And that's one of the things that, I mean, this is my central disagreement with neoliberalism and all these other people who are like, the arc of history bends towards just, I couldn't disagree with that more.
Yeah.
History is decided by whatever the political conditions of the exact time are. And we know what they were. We live sclerotic institutions. We have a rigged rigged economy. We have a way that so much of this, our, you know, both of our institutions are left and right, are sold out completely to whichever interest happens to be occupied by, and the people don't really have a voice. I don't want to go back to that. But I fear that actually that's only been strengthened as a result of this time. So the only thing you can really do is fight, because otherwise, what is the point?
And now we move to the part of the story where we see that Chuck and Nancy are in on it.
Yesterday, House Dems unveiled their latest relief legislation, and it's really something. Now first, let's stipulate, it is definitely better than what the Senate GOP is offering, which is literally nothing, except, of course, corporate liability shield protection so that corporations who put their workers at risk can rest easy that they cannot be sued. And let me also stipulate that there are some worthwhile things in here, extending the $600 unemployment insurance plus up. There's some money for hazard pay for frontline workers, though, frankly, the amount seems woefully insufficient. There's some aid to state and local governments. There's an expansion of various tax credits and deductions that would be useful thing. There's a SNAP increase as families struggle to put food on the table. There are also some inexcusable things. Sagar's going to be covering some of that today. The salt cap tax deduction made it in, which overwhelmingly, of course, benefits the rich. The lobbyist bailout made it in. Not joking. Aid for landlords made it in. In other words, there was really something for everyone, except one very notable group, progressives. Now, it's important to understand the context of this bill. We told you at the beginning of this crisis that corporatist leaders in Washington, Mitch McConnell chief among them, will only feel pressure to do anything for the working class if their pain is affecting stock market performance. Having already passed their corporate theft bill and with the stock market doing just fine, the Trump White House and the Senate GOP are feeling perfectly comfortable where things are and are pivoting to their deficit hawk messaging. So this House Dem bill is really nothing more than a messaging bill.
We have to make this abundantly clear. It's just theater. The $3 trillion bill means absolutely squat because it's already dead on arrival. It means nothing. The only way they could have gotten any relief for workers is to insist before they saved the stock market that they also save the American workers. They could have said, not a penny for the banks until you help the workers. All of our leaders, every one of them, failed us in that first round of negotiations.
It's policy as theater. There are no real stakes here. The GOP is not even negotiating with Democrats right now. It's all about sending a message to the donor class that you got their backs, and it's about a parade of virtue signaling for the public so you can credibly say things would be so much better if the GOP had just gone along with your plan. Now, what I've been told is that establishment Dems are very eager to win over and excite the left of the party. Joe Biden's the next FDR, after all, guys.
Oh, yeah.
I've also been told that Democrats really want to be champions of small businesses and the working class. It's just those bad old Republicans standing in the way. Well, since this bill has no chance of getting through the Senate anyway, there's no constraints from the right. You could put together whatever your absolutely ideal package would be. And so what did Pelosi choose very specifically and deliberately to do? She decided to send a message by explicitly excluding the left's most important priorities. There is no temporary universal health care to deal with the fact that millions are losing their insurance in the midst of a pandemic. In fact, instead, there's a provision to help with COBRA, which is just basically a health insurance company giveaway. There's no recurring UBI payments through the duration of the crisis, even though wild-eyed socialists like Cory Booker and Kamala Harris even support that idea at this point. And most pointedly, there is no paycheck guarantee program in the bill, which would effectively nationalize payrolls of small businesses so that we could avoid further job losses the way that many other countries have done. According to Politico, now while this proposal has found fairly broad support among Democrats and is very popular with the American public, Politico reports that Pelosi, working with House Ways and Means Chair Richie Neal, decided it was just too complicated and too expensive to be put in the bill.
Pelosi unveils $3 trillion coronavirus relief plan amid squeeze from left and right. So here we're speaking specifically of the paycheck guarantee program that Crystal just mentioned, but senior Democrats contend they weren't able to turn the proposal into legislative text, saying it is too costly and complicated. This was put forward by Pramila Jayapal. The Jayapal plan, which is backed by more than 60 House Democrats, has a price tag of more than $650 billion for 6 months. Ways and Means Committee Chairman Neal instead supported an extension of the employee retention tax credit backed by Democratic moderates, which still costs more than $200 billion. But keep in mind that this wasn't going to pass no matter what. So the reason that Pelosi said that it's too expensive, she doesn't want to set any precedent for anything like this going forward. She doesn't want anyone ever to hold her feet to the fire and said that she was in favor of this. Which shows again that she and Chucky are working directly with Mitchie. These assholes are all on the same team. Which is why you'll hardly ever see me attacking McConnell and the other Republicans. I know that they are the bad guys. It's easy to see that. What we need to do is strip away their cover. If we can remove the corporate Democrats who are supposedly giving them opposition, everyone will see that the Democrats are in bed with the Republicans. They're all trying to do the same thing to us. By voting for any corporate Democrats, you continue to enable the Republicans. You continue to prop up the Republicans. If anything, voting for a Democrat causes more harm than voting for a Republican. If we could strip the Republicans of their cover, then people would probably stop voting for them and we wouldn't even have to worry about it.
A ridiculous notion, given that A, you had no problem with the $4 trillion for big business, and B, the bill's not going anywhere anyway. But even a purely symbolic victory for the left was apparently too much for Pelosi. She needs them to know fully and completely that they do not matter and are wholly irrelevant. It's not enough for Pelosi and Co. to have all of the power. They need to thoroughly humiliate the left as well, to put the elected leaders representing that part of the party in their place, and send a message to all the young people and Walmart workers and Amazon warehouse workers to never try to exercise power ever again.
Any one of them could have stood up and said, I'm not voting for this on the first round. And not one of them had the courage to stand up to Schumer or Pelosi or McConnell. Not one. So you wonder why I tell you, you shouldn't vote for Biden. You shouldn't vote for Pelosi. You shouldn't vote for Schumer. Unless the squad and Bernie start to stand up for you, you shouldn't even vote for them. You probably shouldn't vote for anyone on either side of the political aisle unless they're willing to stand up to Pelosi and Schumer and McConnell. Otherwise, we're going to continue to have to watch Nancy Pelosi eat gourmet ice cream from her gourmet kitchen and tell the rest of us to go eat cake.